Yashoda nandana brunch jana dandana Yashoda Yamuna tira banachari Yamuna tira Yamuna tira banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Gopi Janna Ballabha Giribara Chari Jaya Janna Ballabha Giribara Chari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Manachari Yamuna Tira Jai Nita Lurishna Vishnu Par Paramahamsa Padivra Jaka Charja. Ashto Tarasata Shishi Marjis Vain Grace of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Takum Harajiki Ananta Koti Vaishnavindiki Nama Charja Sarayastakum. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yadi dasyasi me kaman. Yadi dasyasi me kaman. Yadi dasyasi me kaman. Varangs tvam varadarshava Varangs tvam varadarshava Varangs tvam varadarshava Yadi dasyasi me kaman Varangs tvam varadarshava Kamanam hridi asamrohaṁ kāmaṁ vidyāsamurāhaṁ kāmanam hridyāsamrohaṁ bhavatas tu rine varam bhavatas tu rine varam bhavatas tu rine varam kamanam vidyasam kamanam vidyasam roham bhavatas tu rine varam yaridashasi me kaman varangstvangva varadarshava kamanam vidyasam roham bhavatastu vrinevaram yadidasyasi me kaman varangstvang varadashava kamanam vidyasam roham bhavatastu vrinevaram Yadi, if dasyasi, want to give, me, me, kaman, anything desirable, varan, as your benediction, tvam, you, varadarishabha, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can give any benediction? Kamanam, of all desires for material happiness. Kridi, within the core of my heart. Asangroham, no growth. Bhavata, from you. To, then. Vrine, I pray for varam, such a benediction. So he's saying, kamanam priti asamroham, that don't let these material desires grow in my heart, basically. Translation, oh my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Responsively, O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there will be no material desires. So a very wonderful prayer from Prahlad Maharaj. And we see here, this is there's 10 verses here where Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to the Lord. And he's basically explaining that he has no interest. Actually, well, if we go back a few verses, we look at the end of the previous chapter, verse 52, Krishna's saying, Nrisingadev is saying to Prahlad, I want to give you a benediction. I'm happy with you. Please, I want to give you a benediction. And Prahlad Maharaj is saying, not interested. not interested. You think I'm some sort of merchant. You know, you look at the acharyas, they give a lot of sort of, you know, dialogue in between some of these things. Even Prabhupada was, because in one of the verses here he mentioned Vanik. The Vanik means a merchant. So Prahlada Maharaj is saying, you think I'm some sort of merchant that you're offering me these benedictions because I serve you? And then in another place he's saying, you know, are you trying to test me? You know, this is some sort of test. He said, actually, no, you wouldn't test me. You're just doing this to show the glories of your devotees. Because in one of the previous verses, I can't remember if this is verse or in a subsequent verse, he talks about how you've asked me to descend here to demonstrate the life of a pure devotee. So Prahlada Maharaj is revealing that he's a Nitya Siddha. He's not an ordinary personality. So Krishna's asked him to come down and to function, to show the qualities of a pure devotee. And we'll see this is quite common with pure devotees. This, you know, they don't have material desires, and they're not interested in anything for themselves. And we'll talk more about this in a little while. I'll read Prabhupada's purport. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to pray for benedictions from the Lord. He said, Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundaring, Kavitang, Vajagishakamaye, Mamma Jamani Jamani Shre, Bhavata Bhakti Rohoituki Twai. O my Lord, I do not want from you any amount of wealth, nor many followers, nor a beautiful wife. For these are all material desires. But if I have to ask you for any benediction, I pray that in whatever forms of life I may take birth, under any circumstances, I will not be bereft of your transcendental service. And you look at these Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim. You know, these are the most desirable things in this material world. They want wealth, they want followers, they want beautiful wife, they want fame. All these things are so desirable in this material world. But a devotee understands that these things are actually an impediment. They only serve to block us from surrendering to Krishna. They have no benefit whatsoever. And it's kind of interesting because this is what everyone in this material world is aspiring for, is all these things, because they have no concept of bhakti. And a few years ago, I attended a class with Bhanu Swami, gave class on this verse. I like to take notes of different classes. And he was making the point that even if you're, you know, if you're in the mode of goodness, because he's talking about, you know, Tamaraj and Sattva and how the Varnashram can actually, and the practice of you know, these rules of Varnashram can help us to come to the point of Sattva. But you can spend a million lifetimes in Sattva, it will not give you bhakti. It will not actually give you this love for Krishna. It just puts you in a position where you're more favorably disposed towards that. But it won't give you bhakti. It's just like you can do piety. You can do any amount of pious activities. But this will not give you bhakti. If you're a pious person, there's no guarantee of devotional service. But piety puts us in a, we have a better disposition towards bhakti, so that if this, you know, someone comes along and sows the seed of bhakti in the heart, or, you know, actually, Lord Chaitanya mentions that the seed is already there in the heart. But it just cut it, or die. It just requires to be awoken. So if someone comes along and awakens that seed, then it will flourish. But otherwise, it's dormant within the heart. And this is why it's explained that the only way to get bhakti is through the contact of a devotee. And who was Prahlad's contact? Narad Muni. Narad Muni is an extraordinary preacher. There's one or two cantos in the Bhagavatam where Narada is not mentioned. And there's a really nice purport in the first canto where Prabhupada, I'm just paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly how Prabhupada phrases it, but he says, and we're very grateful that Narada Muni has appeared in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, Prabhupada's expressing his appreciation of Narada Muni's devotional service. And we see here how this seed of bhakti has been awoken in Prahlad's heart. But actually, we can understand, you know, from these verses here that Prahlad is a Nitya Siddha. But nonetheless, for the purpose of the pastime, this was dormant. And we see this is in so often, you'll see in the lives of different personalities, even you look at Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it appeared in the beginning stages that he was an impersonalist. But at some point, he started to take up the process of bhakti. But we can understand with these great souls, this is not an ordinary thing. This is more in the realm of lila. It's not something that's just a mundane thing. Like in my example, it's like it's only by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees that I actually understand anything about devotional service. And so, you know, the devotee awakens this desire, fans the spark that's there within the heart, and brings that spark to life. Devotees are always on the positive platform, in contrast to the Mayavadis, who want to make everything impersonal or void. One cannot remain void, sunyavadi. Rather, one must possess something. Therefore, the devotee on the positive side wants to possess something, and this possession is very nicely described by Prahlad Maharaj, who says, "If I must take some benediction from you, I pray that within the core of my heart there may be no material desires. The desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not at all material." Yeah? So this is one of the points that's given by Rupa Goswami in the I think it's the second chapter of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is the first chapter for us in the Nectar of Devotion. And there we see he's pointing out that he's describing, he's giving a sort of a synopsis of Vaidhi Sana Bhakti, Raghunuga Sana Bhakti, and Bhavra and Prema. And he said that if there's any other motive than to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is Vaidhi. You know, because you'll see with the advanced devotees, their only motive, their only, I think it's called Udipan, isn't it? Stimulus, is to please Krishna in whatever it takes. And we see there's so many examples, just like we see with Bhishma, such an extraordinary example of an exchange of love. I mean, we see this in so many different pastimes, how even with this story here of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, this is not some mundane fight. This is Krishna having a loving exchange with his devotees, because Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha are actually not ordinary personalities. They're Krishna's personal attendants. And if we read, I think it might be in the third canto, probably around before the pastime where Swayambhuva and Satyarupa bring their daughter Devahuti to Kama, I think it's a Kadama, it's before there, that it's describing how Jai and Vijay descended to this material world, and is saying there how this was actually the arrangement of the Lord, because he wanted to have some exchange with his devotees. So even though it may seem externally, you know, like if you take the mundane perspective on it, is that Krishna is fighting and killing and stuff like that. It's a loving exchange. You know, it's beyond our ability to comprehend. And if you look at the same with Bhishma, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes how when I always kind of wonder, how did Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur know about this? You know, coming from a pure background. But he says when Bhishma was shooting arrows and Krishna was allowing them to cut his body. It wasn't, you know, like some mundane body, he was getting cut and he's bleeding. Krishna was allowing it to happen. He was manifesting bleeding just for the exchange. Because a Kshatriya, when he sees blood, he's enthused. He's fired up. Especially if he sees his own blood, he gets really, you know, the passion comes up in them. So Krishna was manifesting his blood, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, you know, Krishna was seeing this like flowers, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he said that Krishna was experiencing this like when a lover bites the beloved on the neck, and you know, some, I don't know if you've ever done that, but it leaves like a welt on the neck. They call it a hickey or a love bite, you know. So Krishna was experiencing it like that. He was seeing this as an exchange of love. So we can understand, according to the relationship the devotee has with the Lord, then the exchange manifests. So we see, you know, with Bhishma, with Arjuna, with these Kshatriyas, the exchange is manifesting in a particular way, according to their rasa. So you know, Bhishma's rasa was virya, chivalrous rasa. Arjuna's rasa was Sakha. He was a friend, but you can also see in how these relationships manifest and how they come about or how they play out. Because if you look at Arjuna's rasa, when this you know, at one point in the 11th chapter, when Krishna manifests his universal form, Arjuna was overwhelmed. He's offering prayers, Aishwarya prayers to Krishna. So this interfered, this overrode his relationship with Krishna. But you see, with more advanced devotees like Mother Yasoda, for instance, you know, because this is the month of Damodar, and the month of Damodar is a very beautiful pastimes. But you'll see, like the previous, you know, like just before this happened, just before Krishna, you know, broke the pot and was tied up by Mother Yasoda, just before that, what happened was that Mother Yasoda was seeing the universal form, etc., inside of Krishna's mouth. But because she was Krishna's mother, she didn't want that. She said, "Oh no, this can't be right. You know, I want to. You know, this is my baby. I have to feed him." So the power of her motherly love overrode this Aishwarya, the element that broke through. And also we see, you know, in the pastime of the Damodara Leela, how, you know, this motherly affection is so strong that even like Anirudha, he gave a class on Damodara Leela at New Govardhan, and he was making the point that you know, like the acharyas, they describe how is it that Mother Yasoda, even though while she's breastfeeding Krishna, goes to the stove to attend the milk, but this was also service to Krishna, because looking after milk to make, you know, because she had a number of cows. I've heard different numbers given, but I haven't seen where Prabhupada gives numbers. Prabhupada just said, he quotes the example of, he said, just like a horse with one black ear, very, very rare. So Mother Yasoda also had these very rare cows, and they would produce particularly sweet milk, and she'd feed them different types of herbs and grasses and stuff to make the milk very sweet, because she didn't want Krishna to go to the houses of the gopis and steal the butter and the yogurt from their houses. So she was doing that because she was thinking the reason he's stealing was because what I'm making is not good enough. So she's always wanting to enhance the service. This is the nature of devotee. This is the nature of devotees, is they want to enhance the service they're doing for Krishna. They want to deepen Krishna's pleasure. But actually what was going on was Krishna wanted to have these exchanges with the other residents of Vrindavan, because they also wanted to have this motherly exchange with Krishna. They wanted to, you know, see Krishna as their son. They wanted to have these interactions. They wanted to feed him. So they manifest these different desires. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his comments on this, he mentions that, I think from memory, he quotes that verse 15:15, Savasha Sanavisto, Savasha Chaham Hridi Sanavisto, that Mata Smriti Gyona. So Krishna, the Lord in the heart, he gives the understanding of what should be done first and what should be done second. So, you know, Krishna is instructing Mother Yasoda within the heart, you have to tend the milk. And then this facilitated the pastime of him going and you know, breaking the yogurt pot or the butter pot and distributing it to the monkeys and things like that. You know, so we see how, and Krishna's different shaktis also, I can't remember all the shaktis that are involved. I was reading a commentary about this the other day, and it was talking about how obviously the Leela shakti, the Swarup shakti, different shaktis, they get involved in these things to manifest the pastimes in a very, very sweet way. And the whole idea behind these pastimes, and this is what we're seeing happening here also, is to churn the affection that devotees feel for the Lord. You know, to deepen that affection more and more. And we see with these exchanges with Prahlad and Nrisingadev. It's really, you know, okay, so Nrisingadev is protecting Prahlad, but Prabhupada, quoting on that verse, many times he says it's actually Krishna doesn't need to come to protect the devotees, because the devotees are already protected. Why are they protected? Because they never forget Krishna. The Saranam Hriyayam Mam Saranam Hriyayam Tuham, it mentions in the ninth canto how that the Lord is in the heart of the devotee and the devotee is in the heart of the Lord. The devotee knows nothing but Krishna, and Krishna knows nothing but the devotee. This is the nature of the relationship. It's so thick, you know, that this relationship is so strong that the devotee can never give up Krishna. The material bodies are going to come and go. They're inconsequential to a larger extent, then they don't really matter that much, because, you know, it's, sometimes we suffer, sometimes we're happy, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. You know, in Krishna he says, Arjuna, matra spasta kunteya sitoshna sukha dukkata. It's just sensory perception. It's just what you're perceiving. You know, just like, you know, I've got three layers of clothes on right now, and I see you've just got a shirt on. Why? Because you have different senses from me. So according to senses, we see things different. You know, we experience things differently. And so that's the nature of the material world, is because we all have different perception, therefore we're seeing the material world differently. But understand, it's just a temporary manifestation of the Lord's external energy. It'll come, it'll go. You know, and in between there'll be some ups and downs, you know. So it's not something we should really be so concerned about. But the thing is, devotees can understand that. This is one thing that's being pointed out here in the pastimes, what Prahlada Maharaj is talking about here, is a devotee actually understands the relationship between Krishna and himself, or themselves. You know, a devotee understands that Krishna is my master, he's my only master, I don't want any other master. And my only position is to be a servant. And this is a really important point that's being brought out here by Prahlada Maharaj, is saying, this is the nature of devotees. We're just servants of Krishna. And if you look at every single devotee, regardless of their rasa, they take the position of a servant. Even it mentions in the fifth chapter of the Adi Lila, it says, Ekala Isha Krishna Arsabhibhrita Yariyachinayasetaychinitra, that Krishna is the only master. And all others dance as he makes them do so. And this is all others. Doesn't just mean jivas, it means all others. Yeah? And Prabhupada gives a very elaborate purport on this, and he explains that even we, because the fifth chapter of the Adi Lila, excuse me, is called The Glories of Nityananda Ram. So it's talking about the nature of Nityananda and how he's Balaram Hoilo Nitai. And in this purport, Prabhupada explains how that Krishna is Ekala Ishvara. Ekala means one. Ishvara. He's the only controller. Krishna. No one. There's no other controller. And all others dance as he makes them do so. So Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that even we see all these different manifestations of Vishnu forms. What do they do? What are they doing? They're serving Krishna. You see the Purusha avatars, they manifest the universe. Why? It's serving Krishna. Lord Balaram, who's considered to be the first expansion of Krishna, what does he do? What's he known as? He's known as the Supreme Personality of Servant to Godhead. So we see in the deity room, for instance, all the different paraphernalia we're using to serve the deity is understood to be an expansion of Lord Balaram. So this is why we don't move things with our feet and stuff like that in the deity room. We don't step over things. You know, the deity's asan, the deity's Brahman thread, the umbrella over the deities, all these things that are understood to be expansions of Balaram or other associates, just like we have the different flutes. There's I can't remember how many, there's five or six or seven different types of flutes. There's Bhangsi, there's Murari, there's so many different flutes there. They're all different personalities. This is the nature of the transcendental world. Everything is personal. Yet we see that there is only one enjoyer. But the problem we're experiencing, and this is the problem for all jivas, is we're influenced by karma. You know, karma tends to pervade our existence. And you'll see, like, you know, just go outside, you know, go outside the temple grounds and just have a look what's going on. You know, all these houses around here, like, the, you know, I mean, I used to sit up, you know, in the top of a Prabhupada house at the back there when there was the Sankirtan office, I don't know what it is now, and just look, you know, wonder at, you know, all these renovations that were all, this one's doing it, then this one's doing it, and this one's doing it, they're all doing renovations, putting in a pool, they're putting in this, they're putting in that, you know. Because when I first came here to this temple, it was all just like, you know, old cottages, it wasn't very fancy at all, and then wealthy people started moving into the area. And so they're all expanding their influence. They're all expanding, you know, their material possessions. Why? Because they want to enjoy the material world. But the interesting thing is, no matter how much they try to enjoy, they're never really successful. They may get some limited enjoyment for some time, but then suffering comes along. Adibhautik, adidaivik, adviatmik, you know, all this suffering just comes along. And they have to suffer in so many different ways. You know, like there's There's, you know, heat, there's cold, there's, you know, in a few days' time, there's going to be 3 days of heavy thunderstorms that the Weather Bureau is predicting. Or there's tsunamis and there's earthquakes and there's all types of stuff, all types of bushfires. You know, Australia's famous for bushfires. I heard just recently, was it in Bairnsdale or somewhere? They had massive bushfires last year, and then this year they had massive floods, worst floods they've ever had. You know, it's just non-stop. That's the nature of this material world. If you're trying to enjoy in this material world, this is what you're going to experience. And the problem, the thing is, like, it's not that devotees don't also go through the same experiences, but they just see. It's just the turnings of the material world. It's not anything we need to identify with. It's like, I've got a bit of something chesty going on right now. And one of the devotees was saying before, the weather's not very good right now. But it's just the weather. It comes and goes. You know, what can you do about it? You know, it's matraspasa tukuntiya, sitoshna sukudukata, agama bina nista, tangas tatikshapsa bharata. So a devotee learns how to tolerate all these difficulties. And we see in this wonderful example, this chapter is called, I think, Prahlad, the most exalted devotee of the Lord, or so the best of the exalted devotees. So we see Prahlad, you know, his father tried to subject him to so many horrific situations, really. Tried to have him pierced by weapons, boiled in oil, thrown into a pit of snakes, thrown from a cliff. And what did Prahlad do? Did he resist? Did he try to fight back? He just tolerated it. Understanding. It's just the external nature. It's not going to, you know, whether I live or die doesn't really matter as long as I'm absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And the example of Ritrasura is an extraordinary example. You know, he was in this situation. It's quite extraordinary when you look at some of the devotees, the stories of some of the devotees in the Bhagavatam, how, you know, he was created to try to kill Indra, but actually there was a slip up in the chanting of the mantra. So, you know, it wound up being that he'd be Indra's enemy, but Indra wouldn't be his enemy. And so what happened was at the point when Indra was destined to kill him, and he killed him with a foam weapon because he was so powerful, no other weapon could kill him. But Indra became just, you know, at one point, Ritrasura, he smashed him with his club, and he there's blood pouring from Airavata's mouth, and Indra's was knocked from the elephant, and he dropped his club, and he became very discouraged. So then Ritrasura, knowing that his destiny is to be killed by Indra, he's just accepted it. And he starts preaching to Indra. Come on, get back on your elephant, start fighting. You know, don't be a wimp. He's just saying that this is your destiny, is to kill me, so just do it. He was so detached from external circumstances and just understood that what his destiny was, and that it was his duty only to serve Krishna. And for Indra, this was like a real, you know, like thunderbolt from the blue kind of thing, just woke him up. Just, you know, he really had quite a realization of his position, but also of the greatness of devotees. And this is one of the points that's being emphasized here. see, like, I think it's from here, chapter to up to text 10 is just Prahlad Maharaj offering his prayers, but then at some point, I can't remember which verses, but I think it may be the ones after that, where he accepts the benediction, and you know, Lord Nrisingadev tells him. But then what happens after that is that Lord Nrisingadev starts to glorify devotees. And we see that often, actually it's always the case with these pastimes, is that Krishna enacts these different pastimes simply for the purpose of glorifying his devotees, to show the supremacy of devotees over all other persons. Because the devotees, you know, Narayana Parasavayana Kutashya Bibhyati Svaga Apavaga Narakeshu Apituliyata Darshana. That the devotees, they never fear any condition of life, the heavenly planets, the hellish planets, it's all the same. You know, so that's one way you can get an idea of where you're at. You know, it's like, whatever condition you're facing, how do you respond to it? You know, sometimes you might be traveling first class, sometimes you might be traveling economy. Is it the same to you? Does it matter? Or do you discriminate? You know, sometimes, you know, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. Do you discriminate, or it's just the same thing? But by the way we respond to this external stimulus, it gives us an understanding of where we're at. By the way, you know, like sometimes things happen which are very much, like you can understand, for instance, how you are influenced by the modes of material nature on how you react to a given situation. Once in Mayapur, Prabhupada was on his morning walk, and where the samadhi is now, there used to be a ring road, and on the ring road there was some workers' facilities, and there was toilets and stuff like that. There was four toilets in a row behind a door. And then Prabhupada was walking, and he stopped, and he sort of turned to the door to these toilets, and he says, "Oh, what is this?" And he pushed open the door with his cane, and the toilets were overflowing. There's like stool and urine sort of floating, you know, down into the drain. And Prabhupada got really upset about it. You know, and then Chutananda Swami turned up, and he was one of the managers. He and Jayapataka Maharaj were managing Mayapur at the time. He turned up and got out of the car off at the basis of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada turned on him. He says, "This is in the mode of ignorance, and because you're in the mode of ignorance, you do nothing." You know, so he was making that connection between, like, you know, if something's in the mode of ignorance and you don't react, if you think it's okay, just like you look at a pig and stool in Vrindavan lying in, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in Vrindavan when they're cleaning out the gutters, but the smell is just like unbelievably bad. But the pigs just lie in it, they love it. So that helps you to understand what their mode of nature is. And then in the class that morning, after that, Prabhupada, he started to talk about the toilet. They called it the nasty toilet. And he said, just like if you mix an acid and an acid, there's no reaction. But if you mix acid and alkaline, then you get effervescence, you get some reaction. And he's saying, so similarly, if you mix goodness and goodness, there's no reaction. But if you mix goodness and ignorance, there should be a reaction. But if there's no reaction, you can understand you're in the mode of ignorance. So we can understand our situation by how we respond to different circumstances. This is a very easy way of at least materially, seeing how we are. We see how Prahlad, even though he's being offered a benediction by the Lord, he's saying, "I don't want anything material, because it's just." And it's really interesting here also, is how he talks about that he's fearful of material life. And this is something we should all take to heart, you know, and really be fearful about. And Prabhupada would say that sometimes. He says, "If I have one criticism of my disciples, it is they are not sufficiently fearful of material life, of material nature, because material nature is very strong, and as long as we don't fully take shelter of Krishna, material nature will affect us, or can affect us." So this is the point that Prahlad Maharaj is making here, and he's praying that, you know, don't allow me to become overwhelmed by these things. But also, it's kind of really interesting, you know, looking at Prahlad's humility here, because he's not thinking, you know, even though he's a great devotee, even though he's directly seeing the Supreme Person, you know, Krishna's right there before him in the form of Nrisingadev. He's not thinking, "Oh, I'm so wonderful," or anything like that. But you'll see, like, you know, this Nadaram Najaram Nasundarim. Someone who has wealth, someone who has followers, someone who has beautiful women or whatever, they become proud of that. They think they're very special. And you see that, you know, people driving around in their fancy cars, you know, the way they drive their car, they like, you know, they like to show off and stuff like that, and drive it fast or whatever, you know. Just like I was walking down, actually, Beaconsfield Parade yesterday, and some guy goes racing past on his motorbike, you know, just showing off. It's really noisy too. It's not like it's a quiet motorbike, really noisy. They want everyone to know about me on my bike, you know, I'm so wonderful, look at this thing I've got. And then, you know, if they're not careful, what do? They wind up running into the back of a truck or something at the end of their life. You know, so we see this happens so often, that, you know, people become proud of what they have. But Prabhupada, he told a story one time. He was traveling on a train in India, and there was a man there who had some pieces of burnt, like a beggar, like a very poor person. Anyway, he had pieces of burnt wood, and he was so attached to his pieces of burnt wood, he obviously was going to take them home and use them for firewood. So Prabhupada coined the phrase, "How the pauper is proud of their penny." And if you look at what we have in this material world. You know, we've got our computers and phones and watches and all these kind of gadgets, cars and houses. But what are they? Yeah. They're just pieces of plastic and glass and things like, you know, they're not very, even like in Australia, the money is plastic. You know, people go, I've got so much money, but it's all just pieces of plastic. And we become proud of it, you know, but you have to understand, actually, there's nothing in this material world to be proud of. And this is the example which is given to us by these great Vaishnavas. He's saying this here, you know, like I'm born in a demoniac family. I've got nothing to be proud of. You know, and Nrisingadeva tells him, no, you become the king of the demons. You have to, you know, you have to rule for the life of the Manvantara, for the life of Manu, which is a really long time. And I think it was 14 yuga cycles. It was 71 yuga cycles, I think. That's a long time. You know, and so he's going to be ruling the kingdom for that long. But he's giving us a really good instruction here, and I think, you know, with these types of stories, they're very, very beneficial for us, because we can learn how to live our lives as devotees. What the goal is, what the sort of benchmark is. Like Prahlad Maharaj is setting a benchmark for us to follow. You know, this is what you need to come to, is this point of not being interested in anything material, not having any material aspirations, but just simply being this aspiration to serve Krishna and to serve Krishna only. In whatever form he manifests himself, whether it's, you know, Radha Krishna, or whether it's Nrisingadeva, or whether it's Ram, or whatever, that doesn't really matter. I mean, obviously Krishna, for us as the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is our ultimate goal, is Krishna, because he's the Ishta Devata of our Sampradaya. But I saw a really interesting simile between this, or comparison between this and Brahma's prayers in the third canto, chapter 9. So we see here that in verse 14, Nrisingadeva says to Prahlad, one who always remembers your activities and my activities also, and who chants the prayers you have offered, becomes free in due course of time from the reactions of material activities. So it's just 10 verses. You learn these verses, you know, and chant these prayers that you've offered, and you'll become free. And then we see in the ninth chapter, let me see if I can find it. I think I wrote it down here. This is the 14th chapter of the... this is here. So this we can actually see that Lord Nrisingadeva is offering us a benediction, or the readers, which is us. He's offering us this benediction, that if you chant these prayers in due course of time, you will actually become free from the reactions of material activities, which is, when you think of it, that's pretty substantial, because this is what's driving us here in this material world, is this desire to enjoy material nature. But if we chant these prayers, and by chanting these prayers, it means we're going to understand who we are. We're going to understand our nature, and we're going to understand that we have nothing to do with this material nature. But then also we see in 3940, the Lord says to Brahma, any human being who prays like Brahma and who thus worships me shall very soon be blessed with the fulfillment of all his desires, for I am the Lord of all benedictions. So a similar point was made here in this verse, how Prahlad is saying that, O best of the givers of benedictions. So we see that you see these experiences with these great devotees. They're very, very similar. And the reason these points keep coming up, excuse me, in the Bhagavatam, is to demonstrate to us, to prove to us categorically that this is the only way forward. If you are serious about giving up your attachments, your material attachments, if you're serious about going back home to Godhead, Mahajani Yenigata Sapanta, follow these great personalities. And Prahlad Maharaj and Brahma are definitely Mahajans. And the prayers, I remember some years ago that Mahavishnu Goswami, he told me to read, you know, to learn the prayers, Brahma's prayers for creative energy. I never did. But after going through the chapter just recently, I realized why. Because these are very, very substantial prayers. And they're very, very instructive for us. And especially we see at the end of his prayers, then Brahma, he's asking Krishna for benedictions. And this is the way a devotee should be praying. You know, please protect me so that I don't become bewildered by the modes of material nature, so I don't become overwhelmed by the material nature. And Prahlad's doing exactly the same thing here. I'm fearful that if I take your benediction, I'll be overcome by the material nature. You know, and then Brahma's also saying, you know, please allow me to always remain engaged in service, not be deviated from service. And then he's saying, please bestow your benediction. This so sabbabhadra karuna bhagavan revide prena smitena nayam buddham. Every pujari knows this verse. You know, we chant it when the Lord wakes in the morning. We're asking the Lord to, you know, smilingly bestow his glance upon us and you know, give us his benediction. So, yeah, very, very important prayers. And also here, the same thing, very, very important prayers for us all to learn and become familiar with, because it's helping us to understand our position in this material world and who we really are and what's our relationship with Krishna. Okay, I'll finish there. Any questions at all? Yes, you had a nice question yesterday too.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the nice class. Prabhu, you mentioned how we want to do service to Lord Krishna and make him happy through that. It is called Vairi Sadhana Bhakti. But Prabhu, when we see, like, if my question is, if we want, we do service to make him happy and then we want the mercy so that we can get love of Godhead, is that okay or is that also Vairi Sadhana Bhakti?
It's somewhat material in a sense, because you want something. Whereas we see the devotee doesn't want anything. The devotee just wants service. To want mercy is not wrong, but a higher understanding is to just want to please Krishna. And you see, this is the example that's manifested by the residents of Vrindavan. They don't want anything from Krishna. They just want to please him because he's so wonderful. They love him so much. It's just like, you know, with your mother and father, you love them so much, you don't want anything from them. You just want them to be your mum and dad. You know? So it's the same, similar kind of idea. But I have a question for you. When are you going to give class? Yeah? You ask such intelligent questions. You should be giving class. Yeah? Anything else at all?
Hare Krishna Prabhu for yes, nice Prabhu. Class. Prabhu, here is mentioned that he is praying that let there be no material desire. But even like jnanis also at the advanced stage, they don't have any material desire. So isn't it like it should have been asked that bless me with the pure devotion, because automatically it has got that element of no material desire.
Sir. Yeah. You'll see as the verses go on that Prahlad Maharaj is explaining this further, because ultimately he just wants to serve. You know, he's saying, you know, I don't want anything like this because it will distract me from you. This is because, and we see in yesterday's verse, I think it was talking about the perfect master and the perfect servant. Because Prahlad's realization is he just wants to serve the Lord. He doesn't want, and actually that's what he's doing eternally in Harivash. In Harivash, this is the place where Prahlad Maharaj lives, and there he's serving the Shringadeva eternally. And that's so his desire was fulfilled. And you know, he also said, well, if you want to do anything, just please, you know, give liberate my father, because he was so inimical towards you, and you know, etc. And then the Shringadeva saying, you know, he because he touched my transcendental body, he's liberated 21, and because of your service, 20 generations past, 21 generations past, 21 generations future, also liberated. So, yeah, he didn't want anything for himself. He just wanted to please Krishna. He just wanted to serve Krishna. And that's what you'll see this becomes quite prevalent. It goes up to, you know, two more verses. So, yeah.
And also we beg for protection from the Lord, specifically by chanting Narasimha prayer. But still, we want protection from the Lord by chanting Narasimha prayer, Narasimha Pranam. So, but still, that material desire haunts.
But why do you want protection from Krishna? What's that protection? How does it manifest?
Protection, like, so that we pray to Lord Narasimha that the way he protected Prahlad Raj, the same way he protect us.
Yeah, but what was Prahlad, what was he praying for?
Yeah, as we can see that...
He wasn't praying, you know, give me a nice house, give me a nice car, give me a strong body. And he wasn't praying for that. He's saying, please protect me so I can never forget you. And that's the point that Prabhupada makes here. At the end of the desire to serve the Supreme Personality of God is not at all material. It's not a material desire, it's a spiritual desire. Because why? You want to serve Krishna. That's all you want to do. And that's what Prahlad was praying for, is don't give me these material desires because this will distract me from your service. I just want to serve you. Why? Because the devotee finds so much satisfaction in serving Krishna. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've had the realization many times, is there's no better life than being a devotee of Krishna. It's just so nice in every way. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj's realization is. He doesn't want anything else because he knows there's no better life.
Yeah. So is it being conveyed or implied here that we should just ask for Lord's service? We should not put any condition that...
It's very bluntly stated here.
Yeah.
It's very blunt. It's not like it's hidden.
Yeah.
It's very straight. Prabhupada's very straightforward, and Prahlad's very straightforward. This is what you should, and that's why these prayers are very important. And that's why I say the same with Brahma's prayers, because Brahma, he's praying for the potency to create the universe, but he also says, "Don't let me forget you." And then Krishna gives him benediction that you will never forget me. Don't worry. Yeah, and Nrisimhadev has become pleased with Prahlad Maharaj, and the reason he's become pleased is because of this unmotivated devotional service, because it's not contaminated by any material desire. So this is what pleases Krishna. If you have no material desire in your service, Krishna becomes satisfied, he becomes pleased. When Krishna becomes pleased upon you, your life is perfected. You don't need anything else in life.
Yeah. Jai, thank you so much, Prabhu.
Really enlightening. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
I wish that you also ask question, because you can truly represent us, you know, because you have got that depth, and sometimes that will help. Isn't it? Correct me if I'm saying wrong anything.
Next time,